Association and IndieBirth.com. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event.
Welcome to IndieBirth's series of podcasts here on iTunes, Taking Back Birth. Good morning, everybody. Maren here with another special guest today. We seem to be on a whole thread of interviewing really cool people. And I'm very grateful for that, especially when they come my way, as this woman has. Today, I'm going to be talking to Julia Aziz, who is the author of a book called Lessons of Labor, One Woman's Self-Discovery Through Birth and Motherhood. Now, I was contacted, I think, by your publisher, Julia. Is that right?
The publicist from the publisher, yeah.
Yeah, she sent me an email. And I was really thrilled to get Julia's book. We do receive a fair amount of things and products and such that people would love us to take a look at. And of course, not everyone sort of meets our standards or kind of is in line with our message. But I didn't feel that way about Julia's book. I think it's beautiful and insightful. And so just wanting to welcome her here today. Welcome, Julia.
Thank you so much, Maren.
Yeah, you're so welcome. I guess I can read your bio, but if we want something a little more personal, would you tell our listeners a little bit about you?
Sure. And probably whatever bio you have by now might even be different. I've been in a state of a lot of change going on in my work life lately, but my background is as a counselor. I'm a LCSW and an ordained interfaith minister. And so I've done a lot of counseling before having children. I worked with children and families and adults and couples and just doing sort of straight psychotherapy. And then also doing some hospice chaplaincy work. Mm-hmm. And when I had children, I went part-time and was doing sort of like spirituality and community service group for teenagers, and then started working at a graduate school for Chinese medicine. And I still work there doing, leading some meditation groups and doing some teaching and some sort of life coaching kind of things. Been doing more hospice work again. And my real passion is for doing workshops and silent retreats for people that are service professionals, like whether they are counselors and social workers or midwives and doulas, anyone whose work is to serve others. I really love doing sort of self-renewal and focusing on purpose and getting into kind of self-compassion to really support people that are doing that kind of work day in and day out. It's a passion of mine. So I do independent retreats and writing workshops, and kind of at a point where I'm feel less like I can say this is my title, and more that I have a lot of different projects that I like to work on. So I like life to be pretty creative.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I asked and didn't read your bio, even though your bio is wonderful. That was way more interesting and personal, and lots I didn't know. So thank you, and thank you for doing that work, because, well, as you know, holding space for those that hold space is just as special of a role and much needed. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Definitely.
So let's dive into talking about your book. How about just starting with how this idea came to you, or how this book manifested for you?
Yeah. So it really started, I mean, it might have even... Some of the general concepts were probably coming to me when I was pregnant with my first child, but it wasn't till my first labor, after my son was born, I was just blown away. I mean, I know people had told me it was going to be this big experience, but it was, no one had told me what a huge emotional and sort of personal growth experience it was going to be in labor, like how much mental challenge there was going to be. I knew there'd be physical challenge. And I wrote down that story right away in the middle of the night after he was born, because I couldn't sleep. I was so amped up. Mm-hmm. And I just kept seeing all these parallels to the way that I had been my relationship to the contractions and the pain and then everything that kind of went on during the birth was such a parallel to the things that were sort of challenges for me in everyday life, just on a less intense level. And so that kind of was the birth of the idea of how can I felt this strong desire to write about it, like drawing the parallels between such an intense experience as childbirth and how whatever goes on in there is a reflection of our own personal, growth during all of our life experiences. And so by the time my third child was born, I'd been writing notes on the book, but after that I realized if I don't write this book now, it's just going to be gone because yeah. I'm going to move on. I knew I was done having children. And so it basically, I call it lessons of labor because there are so many life lessons, I guess you could call them, that came out of childbirth and of mothering. And so the book sort of goes through each of my three births and my miscarriage and kind of breaks out different lessons and how those same truths were important for me to learn in my transition to becoming a new mom. But really in all of life, I say like these lessons aren't things that, okay, I learned it and now I'm done. It's more just like the continual learning throughout life that kind of cycles back when I need it.
Yeah. And I guess that's why I really resonated with your book and just absolutely love it, because I agree. I don't think any of the lessons you've written about are contained to birth. And I know as a midwife, these are things, we may bring up or try to pass on to women, but also in my own life, aside from how many births I've had, it doesn't seem to matter. Yeah. There are still things. So in fact, mm-hmm. while you were talking, I'm looking through your book and I just flip it open, which is cool because, you want to see kind of what it brings when you do that. And mm-hmm. what I turn to, the lesson that this page is about, is sometimes the only way past the hard stuff is through it. And I literally said almost the same thing to a friend yesterday. So let me hear you talk about that. That's a beautiful lesson, a hard one sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. It reminds me of, I had a pretty challenging fall and winter that I'm so relieved to be coming out of now. And I read this book by Thomas More called Dark Nights or Dark Night of the Soul. And it was really helpful because it's basically looking at whatever it is that's going on in life, whatever pain or challenge or just trauma, whatever huge difficulty you're faced with, trying to like feel better or get around it is often of no use. Like you can keep trying, like, how can I sidestep this? Or I don't really want to feel the full despair of this situation, but really if we just dive into it and just go and allow ourselves to feel, like there's sometimes just no other way like this. And I feel like childbirth is like that. Like once you're in it, like the only way out is to birth the baby. Like there's no other, you got to keep going. And so, I think there's so many things in life like that where, an avoidance of pain really just keeps us stuck rather than helps us get through it.
Yeah, that is so wise. The way out is through.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I like to say.
I definitely do not. It's like all of these things. It's like I was reading something yesterday about how, none of us are coming up with anything new, really. but it's like this is the learning of humanity, and it's just we all have a different way of expressing it or maybe different people we reach with it in the way that we speak about it or do art about it or whatever it is,
But you're right about that. It is. It's ancient wisdom, but I think it is it's needing to be brought forward in different ways and talked about in different ways. And you can pick up this book and it can mean different things to you on different days at different points in your life. So I think that's the real beauty, is that this book could be read by anybody kind of wherever they are. And if they're open to receiving that message, they'll get it where they are at.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
So let's see. Another one that I think is quite important as far as this podcast goes and the work that we do here at Indie Birth. Safety is relative.
Yeah.
I feel like I have that conversation a lot. So let's hear your take on it.
Yeah. And it's funny when you say that, because I don't have the book in front of me and I don't remember what my take was on it at that time.
That's okay.
And so I can talk about it, about how I feel that now.
Yeah. Even better. Even better.
Yeah. I think what is for, like, in the context of birthing, you know, like, what is safe for me might not feel safe for a different woman. You know, like, I felt my first birth was in a hospital and my other two were at home, and I felt safer in a hospital for that first birth, but for the second one felt so much safer being at home just from what had gone on before, you know. And it's like, to tell a woman, like, this is what you have to do. I think that the animal body knows what it needs, you know? And so, I really believe in trusting that, you know? And so sometimes women will talk to me about, you know, trying to make all these different choices. And I really feel like it's, that we have to tune in to ourselves and, like, what is going to give me the greatest sense of peace? Mm-hmm. There's going to be uncertainty, and anything can happen no matter what. There's quite a large amount of life that we cannot control.
Right.
But we do what we need to do to feel safe. But I think that is really different. Like, for instance, I'm thinking about a friend who, like, for me, I would rather be, like, hiking alone in the desert, and I would feel safer doing that than, like, walking by myself at night in New York City. Because I'm feel safer in nature and kind of like nature danger than I do like crowded with people.
Right.
I have a friend who's a real very like city person, and she would never even go on a trail by herself, you know, because that feels, it's just too desolate. So I think that it's really part of just tuning in and noticing, like, when my body relaxes and feels like it can really, you know, feels safe, feels like I'm okay.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. For me, that feels very much the same way. And it also makes me think of just a bunch of other discussions, you know, mm-hmm. even like the word risk, you know, what does that mean? And all the depth that really should go into these sorts of words, where I think the mainstream world wants us to believe it only means one thing.
Right.
You know? And like you're saying, it's really personal, and we can't choose that for somebody else. So I wholeheartedly agree. I think feeling safe is different than maybe the illusion of safety.
Right.
But is still somebody else's. I mean, it's theirs to decide, not ours.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, like, safety, when it, in sort of the medicalized birthing community, it's basically like safety means like you don't die. You
know? Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's like, how can we be safe so that nobody dies,
without
you
risk.
Or the baby, mm-hmm. And everything has some risk of death, but like so does being born, like so does living every single day of your life. There's
sure.
always a risk of death,
sure.
right? So there's no if safety means no one will die, then no one is safe ever, right?
Right.
So it's
right.
so it's truth. Like, you know, yeah, when especially with things like birthing, you know, it's like you said, like certain risks, there's a risk of something, but it might be very small, and then there's a risk of, you know, over intervening, and that's much larger or whatever. And there's emotional risks, you know, like in terms of
totally.
Do you let your mother come to your birth, or, you know what I mean? That sort of thing. And yeah, I think that we all kind of differ in what risks feel comfortable and what feels just like way too panic inducing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know that's the kind of conversation that to you and I is just sort of normal, but it is one that I wish more people would have and think about, especially when it comes to birth. And I think you put it in a really lovely way. So yeah, risk and thinking about that. So I've turned to probably my most favorite and simple mantra that you've written. When I am willing to trust, I am surprised by what is possible.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Yeah. I feel like if I were going to sum up the entire book, like the theme of it, it would be trust.
Yeah.
I think that that's been the biggest theme of my life in some ways, and definitely of birthing and becoming a mother. Because it's such a difference from when, like, if I'm trying to control a situation or like just make sure I got a handle on it and manage it and get on top of it, the feeling between that and when I really like, I can still put in my best effort, you know, like show up for my life. I think that's really important.
Right.
But with a sense of, it's not all up to me, and I can trust, not like I can trust myself. I can trust just that whatever's happening is in, like, that I might not understand it, but this is the way. Like, there's no, I might have an imaginary way that's different and I think it's better,
right?
But it doesn't exist. That's just in my head, you know? And so trusting that whatever happens in life is my life, you know? And so, the more I can embrace that and kind of relax into that, relax that I don't need to control, like really truly believe I am not in control. And so I can then enjoy trusting. I think, yeah, that's when I start noticing kind of like little miracles, you know, just things happening that, had I had my way and it had all gone according to plan, would never have happened.
Yeah. There's so much grace in trusting, I think.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
What?
And it's a, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you kind of how you access that trust. How does that feel to you? Or, I mean, I'm asking, I guess, because I believe the same thing, but I do see in lots of women that that's a struggle. It's really a struggle, and birth is probably, at least in my mind, the biggest example of learning to trust. And so I'm always trying to think about kind of ways to explain or practice, because it's also getting in touch with your intuition.
Definitely.
You know, trust doesn't mean, like you're saying, everything goes your way or it's perfect. It's just, yeah, accessing that place where you know all is well.
Yeah, I do think it's very related to intuition. That's what's sort of exciting to me about when I let go and I'm trusting more. I realize that I have much stronger intuition than I notice when I'm distracted by my agenda
exactly.
of some sort. But yeah, I do think it's something like I've certainly had to practice because, and in birth too, like, I mean, I started out in that first pregnancy. Well, I had a miscarriage before my first baby. And
right.
So I was, when I got pregnant with that second pregnancy, I was in so much fear. I just was sure that every time I went to the bathroom, I was going to find blood. Like for the first trimester, I was just so, the opposite of trust.
Yes.
And even throughout, I mean, the second trimester is better, but even throughout later in that pregnancy, and, I had deep fears of the baby dying and not making it through. And in the labor too, just feeling like totally, what's going on here? Like I kept trying to like understand it or something or manage it. And, it's such a difference from when, by the time, like 5 years later, when I was having my third child, I remember being in labor with her and I was like spelling out the word trust when during contractions and like her name and like just kind of repeating different phrases that help me remember what it is that I'm really wanting to do here. And I think for me, like I've really come back to a daily meditation practice that I had kind of let fall off once I had kids and it was so difficult to maintain. So doing things like that, for me, dancing is something else. Like I can really, when I'm dancing, feel the difference from when my body is responding to the music in its own way. And I can just sort of like notice what it's doing, and trusting that like is a really good metaphor for me for how to, be in life, you know, to kind of like see it more as like I'm dancing with life rather than I'm trying to drive it like it's a car, you know?
Yeah, that's a really great metaphor. I like that. Yeah, I love how trust manifests as well, just in different people, in different situations, you know, contributes to that just collective idea that, you know, all the stories combine to give us all more trust in life and the process and even death, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that we just like culturally, it feels like everything is sort of against trust, you know, it's like, how can we be more in control and have more, I don't know, retirement plans and different insurances and different, like, you know, all the dangers that are out there, like continual influx of all the dangers that are out there, and how can you protect yourself against all of them? I mean, all these things are happening. I'm not saying they're not happening, and horrible, horrible things happen to people. So it's not to say like, oh, if they just trusted, that wouldn't happen. I don't think that's true at all.
Right.
You know, but it's just like, what attitude do we want to approach the realities of life with, you know? And it's, when I'm in fear, it doesn't actually help me to operate better in life in any way. And I've had to like really work on, kind of relearning. And, when I catch myself in a lot of worry, which is a big one, like I really like that phrase of like turn worry into prayer,
yeah.
You know? So instead of like, cause that worry is kind of like a negative prayer, like you're continually saying over and over again, all the bad things that could happen, instead of, just saying, you know what, I don't know what to do about this.
Yeah. I'm
willing to receive help.
Sure. And that's again, I think a very important angle of trust is that we don't always know where we're going or how it will wind up. And in birth, something like trust is so invalidated by the world as an actual, you know, method of either making a decision or being okay with what is, or realizing that we don't have control.
Yeah.
And that's really hard for people that want more control and want to know how these things go when we just don't.
I know. And I think that even in women that are like very gung-ho doing natural birth, that control thing can go there. Like you think like, oh, everyone's so trusting and allowing the body. But really, I think we bring our control issues into that, you know? And so it's like, I need to have this setting and I need, you know, these people and, you know, the kind of like, as if that's going to somehow contain the whole situation. But once you're actually in birth, it's like, it's all the body. The body is doing this, you know? And so it's, I do think you're like, the thing about intuition is, I find that like, I can have clear intuition, but only like about this step right now. I don't get to see the whole picture and how it's all going to turn out in the end.
Sure.
But if I just follow that like one step, that tiny little light that's next, you know? And so like in birth, that might mean, I don't know, like changing a position or something like that. Or, you know, like when women all of a sudden feel like they really need something more that before they thought they didn't, instead of the mind saying, no, you shouldn't do that. That's not the right way. Sure. You know, really trusting, like if that's coming from your body, then I mean, the body is the wisest participant in this whole process. Your mind can't even comprehend it.
Right. That's so right. And trust really does come down to being present as well. Mm-hmm. You know, like you're saying, I don't know, maybe about having intuition about things far into the future. But really, when we're feeling into what we need, it's usually that moment. That's our best way to access, I think, that voice.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And even if it has to, because I often will be like, well, but then what about all this planning? There's so much planning going on. I'm like get so tired by how much scheduling is involved. And I mean, you have what, 7 kids?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I can't imagine. But I think even in planning, it's like when the time comes to make some decision for the future, it's like I can only act on what I right now know. And so if I'm really present and in this moment, then that's where the decisions best come from.
Right. And as far as birth goes, sometimes I think that all the planning that people are apt to do is really made of fear. So that's not exactly what we're talking about.
Definitely.
The opposite of what we're talking about.
I know. And I really didn't get that my first time around. I just remember like everyone saying like, well, write a birth plan and say all the things you don't want. It was all fear-based.
Right.
You know? And I mean, it really is, even if it's planning and it's not in the hospital, it's just this, it becomes a thing like, well, if I don't have this, then I won't feel comfortable, you know, instead of like, okay, I'm going to make these preparations, but, once it actually is happening, then I'm going to go with it because there's not really any other choice.
Exactly. And believing that.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we could probably talk about trust all day. Maybe we need to do another project together.
Sure.
That would be fun. Kind of moving through the book a little bit, though, I think the most moving part for me just personally was your miscarriage story, just because that's been my most recent experience. And I felt like your words were some of the most compassionate I had come across, really, ever. And I've read lots of stuff, so I just wanted to thank you for that.
That feedback.
Yeah, it was, like I said, really beautiful and touching. You know, for no other reason than, you know, women are hesitant to share these stories of miscarriage and loss. And so I honor you for sharing that. But again, just purely selfishly, maybe your words touched me. So one mantra in particular, when the heart loses, it also opens.
That really still resonates with me a lot. And it makes me think of this hospice work I've been doing. And I was telling someone about it and I was like, well, I'm hearing like love stories all the time. I mean, that's so much of what it is. Mm-hmm. And it's because when I'm with people in such deep grief and pain, it's like, they're so in their hearts, you know, and all, no matter how many mixed emotions about this person that's dying, you know, or whatever's going on, it's like, all of it's coming from the heart. And I think that's, it's so painful. And miscarriage is so different from other losses in that it's so private because nobody else can really share that with you. No one held this baby, or even saw it. And especially for the mother, I mean, this baby was living inside you. And I feel like it's so important to really make space for grieving that because we hold this in our heart. You know, we hold these beings, and not just the being, but like the dreams of this life with this child. I think it's just like heartbreak. You know, breaking open the heart. It's not an easy way.
Yeah.
To get there, but better to me, it's like better to be in my heart than to be closed off and shut out of it, even if it means experiencing pain.
Right. Yeah. It kind of brings us back to one of those first mantras about, you know, going through, not trying to find your way around. And that's, you know, something I've been thinking a lot about, certainly in that context. You know, because some days are sort of easier than others.
Mm-hmm.
So you find yourself thinking, well, maybe I've gotten around that. Maybe.
Right.
But it's,
I know. You're finally I've emerged.
Nope. You get to sit in it some more. And, you know, sitting in grief is difficult, and beautiful and all of those things. But, you know, coming to another one of your mantras, I think this fits in perfectly. There are no rules to grief, though we may try to impose them. What I need most is patience with my own process. I'm feeling that. So I'd love to hear you talk about that more.
Yeah. I mean, I do think grief is really, it's more like a spiral or something, you know, or even like contractions, you know, like they're like you kind of emerge and you're like, it's okay. Like here I am. And then you go back in, you know, and it's like, no, so much suffering and so much loss. And then there's like some relief and you realize like, oh, I'm just was laughing and I'm, you know, living my life. And then you go, it comes back, you know? And so I feel like it is a process and it's not, people sometimes I think equate grief with sadness, and sadness is a huge part of it and maybe a major undertone, but there's also anger and there's also joy even sometimes. And there's all kinds of different feelings involved in grief. I think it kind of runs the gamut of all emotion. And so I feel like we all want it to be just, okay, let me set aside, like, I'll stay home for a few days and I'm going to grieve.
Sure.
And then I'm going to go back to work and do these things. And then maybe I'll try to have another baby, you know, and like try to like get on top of this experience and know I'm allowed this long to really be in this much of a mess, but then I need to get it together.
Sure.
And I don't think that that is helpful. I think that having a level of patience and trusting that there will be periods of relief, even though the whole era kind of grieving might overall feel really hard, that there's always, you know, there's always coming out of it, going back in, but coming out of it. And there's no other way. It's going to do that anyway. So if we can be patient with that and just know, for some of us, like for me, it took a really long time for me to really feel a lot better after that miscarriage, like to really feel. And then, like I said, it came back when I was pregnant with that next baby, because it came back as fear. But I've known other women that really felt like after a couple weeks, like after their hormones sort of got back to normal, they really just wanted to put it behind them and not talk about that. And that's fine. I mean, I think it's just understanding, like, we all have a different process and not everyone can be with us in that. You know, it's hard for people, especially with something like miscarriage, to really know that someone might need more support, even though it might be 2 months later, you know, because everyone sort of like moved on from that, but you may not have. And I think that there's an honoring to be done there. I mean, this was a loss, and it's okay if that's, I think grieving is also part of how we stay close to whoever it is that we've lost.
Yeah, it's a messy process for sure. Mm-hmm. That's my best word in summing it up. And I've definitely experienced that. You know, I've had a couple early losses, and one in particular kind of didn't bother me. That might sound awful, but you know, I was just able to process it and was surprised when a similar gestation loss was completely different. And I, you know, really struggled. And to me, it's just kind of like what you had said earlier. You know, it's not respecting the process. And I think that's a common theme when we're talking about all of the things that can arise, not only in life, but in the childbearing process. You know, so I think of women that do have a healthy baby, and often the postpartum is so hard for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are so not seen, and they're not heard, and they're expected to be out shopping or doing wash.
Right. And that's what a successful mom looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just this across the board kind of theme where, we're not really recognizing the deeper parts of these processes. And for sure, miscarriage is the most hidden, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a common thread throughout many people's birth experiences, no matter what they look like.
Definitely. Even the birth of a healthy baby with no complications. Exactly. I mean, there's a loss no matter what. Like if it's your first baby, it's an enormous loss. Like all of a sudden, like sleep and independence and, you know, all kinds of things are lost. And even if it's subsequent babies, I mean, it's like you change the entire structure of your family and the different roles that the adults play and how this affects the children. And there's always, you know, it's like with every new beginning, there's an ending also. And so
I love that. I love that you wrote that.
Yeah.
Just turn to that one.
I do really feel, I often hear, you know, like when women have babies and we all are just kind of congratulating the woman who's just like out in the world right away, you know, like just, she can do all the same things and nothing has changed, you know, and kind of like muscling through, whereas a woman that like can't leave the house for weeks, not necessarily because she's on some kind of bed rest, but because she's just really not ready to emerge, you know, like that's the process that she needs to go through. And I feel like it's so important to respect that. And even if she doesn't want you to come too close, just letting her know from a distance that you respect that is so helpful to know that it's okay to be in many mixed emotions.
Yeah, and I suppose that's what I love most about your book. You know, I think you don't even have to agree, but there's so many books out there that want to tell us how it should be, you know, how it looks, how birth is supposed to work, you know, how it feels to have a new baby. And I've read all those books, and really, you know, very few people have experiences that are textbook. And there's not a lot of resources for women to address the depths of these experiences. So again, I just think what you've put together is beautiful and insightful and just really meaningful.
Thank you. Yeah. And it was really, you know, when I was first writing about this, I toyed with the idea of kind of making it more general and less personal. And then I realized that part of what was so difficult for me about reading many pregnancy and parenting books was this advice giving language. Right. And like, I didn't want these lessons to be like, here's your self-help manual and these are how you follow these rules. Right. Like, I was like, I just want to own this is my process and share that, not because my birth stories are not like unusual or, you know, anything like crazy dramatic and that's why one should read them, you know. Right. It's more to me about the process of like honoring and reflecting on how this has grown you or birthed you in your womanhood journey or whatever, you know. And so I figured the best way for me to present that was just to tell my own story. And yeah, I think that there is, I like reading memoirs a lot for that reason, but there are so many parenting and motherhood books that I just find it really difficult. Even if they have good things to say, there's this tone sort of well, you can get it right if you do it this way.
Right. That's what I mean. I think yours has so much intention and sincerity, and that's totally how it came across. Like, this is my experience and this is what I got from it. And that's the kind of stuff I love to read too. Of course, we can see each other in our stories, which is why stories are so great. You know, that's why we need to tell more of them. And that's probably how it used to be. That's how we, you know, came across this wisdom that we all have. We were hearing and seeing people's experiences.
Definitely.
So again, I just honor you for sharing. I think it's a fabulous book. Again, the name is Lessons of Labor by Julia Aziz. Anything else you'd like to add, or website or anything?
You can either lessonsoflabor.com or juliaaziz.com. There's two A's in there, JULIAAZIZ. And the book's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or you can order it through a bookstore.
Great. Well, thanks again, and have a great day, everybody. Be sure to check the Indie Birth site for updates for the Wise Woman Circle upcoming workshops and conference in March 2017. Have a great day.